All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Hey, welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 helicopter pilot, United States Army, 1969. Welcome to the program. We're really excited today. We're going to be talking about educational benefits for all of you out there that maybe are transitioning out of the military, or even if you've been out of the military for a while, you're still maybe eligible to utilize those educational benefits. We've got some experts here that are going to be talking about that. I better give out the phone number here just in case. If you want to ask a question of our guest, the number is 734-822-1600. Before we get into that, I did have one quick little announcement I wanted to make, and that's one of my board members here for Veterans Radio America. Dad is not doing well, and he needs blood, and we need to get people out there to help him out. This is for Joe Melcher. He's an Air Force veteran, and he needs blood and platelets, especially B positive. And so I want you to go wait an hour, and then go to redcross.org, set an appointment, see if you can help out there. I think it'd be really beneficial for all of us and for you. It always feels good. Plus, they give you cookies when you donate blood. So go ahead. All right. That's the unofficial business. All right. Before we get into the program, I need to thank our sponsors. You know, we can never do this program without their support. Starting off with Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in disability claims. Give Legal Help for Veterans a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call, 888-237-8433, 888-237-8433. PuroClean is known as the paramedics of property damage. And the nice thing about PuroClean is that each of their offices is independently owned and operated. In fact, PuroClean is one of the nation's leading restoration franchise networks and is made up of entrepreneurs just like you. And veterans, listen up, you get 25% off, 25% off the franchise fee. That's pretty cool, I think. Charles S. Kettles, VA Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. And then finally, the Irwin Press Corps, American Legion Post 46, and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. If you'd like to support Veterans Radio, please go to our website, veteransradio.org, and click on the donate button. Thank you in advance. And now, let me introduce the folks going to be on our show. So, we're kind of doing something a little bit different today. We are going to be talking, as I mentioned, about educational benefits for veterans. And I've got a co-host today. And my co-host today is our board member from Veterans Radio America. And that is Lydia Pinkham. And Lydia is a Coast Guard veteran. She was a petty officer, second class. And Lydia, welcome to On the Air.
Thanks, Dale. Happy to be here. As Dale said, I was a petty officer in the Coast Guard, did everything from machinery work on board, engineer, to search and rescue and law enforcement. And after I got out, I went straight back to school and used my education benefits right away at the University of Michigan, and then continued on to grad school at the University of Colorado. So a lot of my experience with education benefits come from using them myself and asking a lot of questions and really pestering the people at my certifying office. But now I serve as an academic advisor for not military students, but I do have a lot of military students in my position. So I'm in the university circle, can usually help point students in the right direction. But since I live in that world, this is a kind of an important subject to me. I have a lot of students that are using these benefits right now. Also with us today, joining us from Southeast Michigan as well, We have Mike Wise, who was a lieutenant colonel in the Army, served as an officer for more than 20 years, specializing in command and leadership, communications, project management, really, really diverse background, and retired from the military as a lieutenant colonel after serving as a professor of military science and leadership at Eastern Michigan University. And Mike currently serves as the assistant director of military and veteran services at Eastern Michigan and works as the school's certifying official. So I think we've got a good background of information, and we're hoping to, as most of our listeners are aware, we have a monthly benefits hour, and we usually talk about a lot of health benefits, but we'd like to make a recurring episode talking just about education benefits, because a younger generation of vets is getting out and using these benefits, and it's pretty important. So we can get started. I have some questions if we're ready to move on. Mike, do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I just wanted to thank you for that introduction. I've been at Eastern now for about 11 years. It's hard to believe that time flies as a civilian. So it's been 11 years as a civilian. So I'm really, really happy to have this position. It's been a great opportunity in a kind of a military retirement type gig. I get to deal with a lot of veterans. I mean, I'm talking 300 some per semester. And it's quite a job, but it's also supremely rewarding. So I'm open to any questions you have about anything that has to do with the GI Bill. And so I'm open and I'm ready to go.
All right. Sounds good. And Dale, if you let us know if any calls come in, we'll take those. But in the meantime, I got some good places to start talking to Mike. So
let me give out that phone number one more time. The number is 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. Go.
All right. So I think it makes sense to start kind of from the beginning. Say we have a veteran who's either getting out or has been out for a while, and they're interested in going back to school, but they have no idea what sort of benefits they have, if they have the post 9/11, if they have the Montgomery, if they paid in the Montgomery GI Bill. Where should that person go as their first stop to even see how many months of benefits they have or what chapter benefits they have? What's the best resource?
There's two things, and I hate to say it because you hate to say it's on the website, but that's the way the VA is today. The best place to start, because the VA is the absolute determine eligibility benefits for education. So if someone wants to find out what benefits they have, they have to visit va.gov and they have to apply. That is the number one way to do it. The other way that is secondary, which isn't the most pleasant, is to call into the GI Bill hotline, which is 888-GI-BILL-1. I think it's 888-442-GI-BILL-1. That's the GI Bill hotline. So that's the best way to figure out if you're eligible for benefits. And that includes dependents. So, you know, I get a lot of students who have given their GI Bill, you know, on the post 9/11 GI Bill, for example. A lot of veterans have given that benefit to their children or to their spouses. And so what people don't sometimes understand is that person who's been given that benefit has to apply for that benefit also. It's not just automatic. They have to actually go up to the VA and pull that benefit down. And it becomes theirs legally. So it's no longer the service member's bill. I'm talking specifically about the post 9/11 GI Bill. And so any questions on that one?
Yeah,
I guess.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
both questions. If hypothetically, if a person while they're active duty gives part of their GI Bill to a dependent, and then that dependent no longer needs it, is it possible to get that benefit back to a full 100% for the original person?
Yes. The A few years ago, they changed the name of this whole business to, I believe it was the Forever GI Bill. And then a little bit later, it kind of became the Henry Comery GI Bill. So it gets a little confusing because it just seems like different administrations change the names of these things. But they're all pretty much the same thing. So if it, like I said, if a veteran wants to use their GI Bill, they're on active duty and they're trying to figure out what they want to do with their GI. They can train, as long as they transfer that benefit to a dependent before they leave active duty, they can go back in anytime and they can change the delegation of that beneficiary. And the one thing to keep in mind is that the spouse, normally the spouse and the service member will never lose that benefit. So as long as the veteran delegated that benefit to the spouse prior to leaving active duty or the child, they can go back in and move those months around anytime they want to. And we run into that a lot. Sometimes it'll be at the detriment of the student because the service member will split up the GI Bill amongst three kids. Everybody gets 12 months. And then all of a sudden, one student is running out of benefits, so dad's got to go in or mom's got to go in and reallocate a few months here and there. So it does take a little bit of work on the front end from the veteran prior to leaving active duty.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Dale, you also had a question?
Well, I am naive about this because when I used the GI Bill 100 years ago, it didn't pay for everything, but it did pay for a graduate degree and so forth, which I'm obviously very grateful for. Is there under the newest version of the GI Bill, is this a set amount that's there, or is it that can be divided up? Because you're talking about being able to give it to dependents, which is really an awesome thing. I wasn't even aware that you could do that.
New thing, Dale. That's a new GI Bill that came out in 2009, 8 years after, 8 years after 9/11. Yeah. That's when they used basically what I remember is they were using the post 9/11 GI Bill and allowing you to transfer it to your dependents, because it was kind of a retention tool for Army personnel because people were getting out after all these deployments are sick of it.
Yeah.
Being deployed for 6 years, 7 years, 8 years. And so a lot of people were getting out and, they didn't really talk about it much. But I kind of watched as it developed and, that's where they started allowing the service member to give that benefit to the dependent for three more years of service. And things along those lines. So the post 9/11 GI Bill is different than what you used, which was probably called the Chapter 30 Active Duty Montgomery GI. There's five GI Bills. So they're all a little bit different. And I can talk about those all day, or we can stick with just two of them because there's two that are kind of confused. I know that in Lydia's questions, she's talking about VRNE and post 9/11, which I think is where we should probably focus our efforts today.
Right.
Because there's other GI Bills for dependents and National Guard and Reserves that belong to the VA, but they get a little bit confusing. So I think if we stick to just those main two that you're asking about, I think we'll be good for today.
Yeah.
But of course it's open to you're welcome to ask me any questions about anything, but, those are the two that most often get confused.
Yeah, I think that's a great segue. If we're ready to move on, I think a basic explanation of the difference between the post 9/11 GI Bill and the what's called VRNE, the vocational, I believe chapter 31 and chapter 33 are those two. Could you explain the difference between those two?
Yeah. the way I understand it, and I certify, you know, every student that comes through Eastern Michigan University, the one distinction that's very important to keep in mind, although it's treated like a GI Bill, is the VR&E program, which is a VA program. You have to be 10% disabled to even qualify for it. I'm talking service connected. And everyone understands what service connection means, I think, on this net. That means you were injured in the service, and your percentage of your claim must be 10%. And it's got to be service connected. So if you do have that designation, then you qualify for VR&E. It's not an education benefit. It's not considered an educational benefit. It's considered an employment benefit. So, for example, a student who enters the VR&E program is not there to actually go to college per se. You can go to college. That's one way to do it. But you can also go to barber school. You can go to bartender school. You can go to motorcycle repair school. It depends on whether or not those businesses or those trade schools have applied to actually accept the GI Bill. So let's say somebody wants to go to barber college instead of a four-year university, then that barber college has to have been approved to accept the VA's GI Bill process. Okay. But then a student can use the VR&E benefit for that. I have about 70 or 80 VR&E students at Eastern Michigan, and they all have a VR&E counselor who's a social worker usually, that's a part of the VA system. And those counselors are located all over the United States. Our students primarily have their counselors from Michigan. There's a few from Ohio. I've got a couple from Wisconsin. I actually have one from North Carolina, I believe. So we communicate with the social work folks who are, you know, the counselors for the disabled veterans who have been accepted into the VR&E program. Not everybody's accepted into the VR&E program. You know, some students already have bachelor's degrees, and the intent of the VR&E program is to find them suitable employment following active duty service. And, you know, like I said, if they have a service-connected disability, that makes them even more eligible or more likely to be selected to be in this program.
Okay.
What questions do you have on that?
If a student is interested in pursuing, say they have the at least 10% service-connected disability, is there a first person that they should reach out to find out, to start the process of applying to the VR&E program? Who's the best contact for them to reach out to?
Again, it's va.gov. If you're out there and you're not connected, let's say, I'll give Eastern Michigan a plug, and U of M and Washtenaw Community College also have an asset from the VA. This is a social worker who's actually assigned three or four schools normally in an area. So I have one social worker who's on campus, comes once a week. They can always reach out to him. And if they're going to U of M or they're going to Washtenaw, they can find him. His name's John Cugini. And we can certainly post his information anywhere, you know, if you want it later. But he comes and he's the guy that can be on site once a week to answer questions. But when it comes to actually applying for the VR&E program, it's just like the post 9/11. You have to go to va.gov and you have to find the VR&E application, and that's where you submit it. They've kind of streamlined all that stuff on the va.gov website now. So you just have to go. You unfortunately have to go out to the website.
Okay.
And there's, you know, the VA is trying to get away from paper applications and things like that. So they put it all on va.gov. I would tell you that it's it's pretty robust now, and it's pretty easy to find. Got a lot of big buttons on there with big text letters and pictures, which makes it nice and easy to navigate. So, but yeah, okay. Definitely two distinctions between the VR&E program and the post 9/11 GI Bill. They're two separate things. Post 9/11 is an educational benefit, and the VR&E program is a employment benefit. It's an employment seeking program. Whereas they all are, they're all employment seeking, but I mean, that's, in the end, that's what we want is a job, right? Mm-hmm. But the VR&E program is specifically designed for that social worker and that student to get through school or get through the training and find a job immediately. That's the VR&E.
Mike, can you tell us what some of these benefits are? I mean, the idea, you know, from what I've heard is in addition to paying tuition, there's also a housing allowance and there's some other things that are included with these benefits these days.
Sure. The Post 9/11 and the VR&E program specifically have, let me just start with the Post 9/11. Post 9/11, depending on the soldier's time and service, can range from 40% to 100%. Which means you have to serve at least 3 years on active duty to get the 100% level, which is, you know, that's the GI Bill, the post 9/11 that's going to pay for 100% of your tuition and fees, a housing allowance, and a $1,000 a year book stipend. That's the 100% rate. So students that are at the 50% rate, they haven't served quite long enough on active duty, then the VA is going to give the 50% rate would pay half of their tuition and fees and would give them half of the housing allowance that's authorized for whatever zip code their university's in. And it would be half of the $1,000 book stipend. So it'd be $500 versus $1,000. So, and it's very nice because in the Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti area, the housing allowance is pretty good. It's about $2,300 a month. And so that's, you know, of course, that's not a lot to live on, but it certainly eases the stress of having to have a full-time job while you're trying to go to school. The post 9/11 pays for tuition and fees, pays a housing allowance, and it pays a monthly a book stipend, which usually is paid twice per year, the book stipend, like in the two main semesters. On the VOC, the VR&E program, which stands for Veterans Readiness and Employment. I should have said that earlier. They get a book stipend. They get the VA pays for their books. So their tuition and fees is 100% covered at a four-year university, for example. Their books and supplies are completely paid for by the VA. And their housing allowance is a little bit less unless they still have some post 9/11 GI Bill left, and then they get the same rate that the rest of the post 9/11 folks get. So all three of them cover down on pretty much everything they need for school. Does that help answer that question, Dale?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a good deal for these, you know, for these veterans that are coming out of the service these days. And when you say it pays 100%, so that means that whether you're going to, you know, a lower cost college or a higher cost college, or is there a limit on that?
There is a limit. And I'm not 100% perfect on this yet, but what I do understand is that, the post 9/11 GI Bill has a cap per year. And so let's say, for example, someone got, admitted, and accepted to, let's say Stanford. Stanford tuition and fees are off the charts.
Right.
Okay. So the VA has this program called the Yellow Ribbon Program. You've probably heard of that. it gets confused very often. A lot of folks think it's an extra benefit. But the Yellow Ribbon Program is essentially an agreement between the university and the VA, any particular university that accepts the GI Bill. It's an agreement where the VA pays half of the overage. So there's a limit. There is a limit. I think it's $26,000 a year, $29,000 a year, something along those lines for a student to use. So if those tuition and fee amounts are above and beyond, the $29,000 a year figure, then the Yellow Ribbon Program comes into play to help offset that overage of tuition that is not, over $29,000 a year. And so again, the university pitches in 50% and the VA pitches in the other 50%. That's kind of the agreement of the Yellow Ribbon Program. So for example, at Eastern Michigan, to answer your question even further, Dale, our students don't exceed that $29,000. And so even though we're a Yellow Ribbon school on paper, we don't actually participate in the Yellow Ribbon Program. That's kind of saved for some of the more Ivy League type schools and maybe even University of Michigan, where the tuition's a little bit higher.
Yeah, if I recall, University of Michigan had the Yellow Ribbon Program, and that was when I started there. I received a financial aid offer that included assistance from the Yellow Ribbon Program, or I could only use my GI Bill benefits. So there's sometimes at the beginning of the semester, a couple of those options that students have to weigh. And the best advice is to talk to one of the financial aid people or in the Veterans Services office and see which one of those offers is better to take. Because for me personally, the Yellow Ribbon financial aid package, that side of it would not have come with a monthly housing allowance. Whereas using my GI Bill did come with a housing allowance. And that was part of the decision, and it may have changed over the years, but they're the best people to explain that when it comes through.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, you're very accurate on that, Lydia. It's right on.
Yeah. All right. How we looking, Dale?
I was just going to say we're going to take a break in about 10 seconds, I think, so I can warn Derek of that. We're talking with Lydia Pinkham and with Mike Wise on educational benefits. So anybody out there who would like to know more about what benefits are available to the veterans, today's veterans, you can give us a call here at 734-822-1600. We're going to go to a break with our Medal of Honor segment. When we come back, we'll answer more questions, and because I've got a few. So you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we will be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Captain Louis Millette was wounded by grenade fragments, but refused evacuation. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
While personally leading his company in an attack against a strongly held Korean position, Millette noted that the 1st Platoon was pinned down by small arms, automatic, and anti-tank fire. Millette ordered the 3rd Platoon forward, placed himself at the head of the 2 platoons, and with fixed bayonet, led the assault up the fire-swept hill. In the fierce charge, he bayoneted 2 enemy soldiers and boldly continued on, throwing grenades, clubbing and bayoneting the enemy while urging his men forward by shouting encouragement. Despite vicious opposing fire, the whirlwind hand-to-hand assault carried to the crest of the hill. His leadership and personal courage so inspired his men that they stormed into the hostile position and used their bayonets with such lethal effect that the enemy fled in wild disorder. During this fierce onslaught, Millette was wounded by grenade fragments, but refused evacuation until the objective was taken and firmly secured.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back here on Veterans Radio, and we're talking all about educational benefits for veterans. So I'm going to turn it back over to Lydia Pinkham.
All right. Thanks, Dale. So we talked a little bit about the differences between the post 9/11 GI Bill and the VR&E version of the benefits. So while we're on that thread talking about some of these finances and what's covered, I do have a question about things like fees that students pay. So at most public universities, student starts out, they enroll, they generate a tuition bill, but there are also a lot of mandatory student fees, like the rec center at the University of Colorado. We have a fee for using the bike path and bike repair stations. There's, you know, the student government fee, a lot of these fees that accrue that are anywhere from 70 cents to $30. So usually a couple hundred bucks worth of student fees. And then some universities that have the availability of providing medical insurance to their students will also charge a health insurance fee with a premium per semester. So, Mike, would you be able to talk a little bit about what sorts of fees are covered by these benefits and what sorts of fees students might expect to pay out of pocket?
I can specifically talk to Eastern more than anything, but I don't believe that there's a health insurance benefit payment. That's not something that I've ever heard of. However, when you talk about fees, and when I say tuition and fees, I'm talking about online fees. I'm talking about bookstore fees for online books, things like that that come along. Post 9/11 GI Bill students, I personally, at Eastern and, you know, myself, I certify those because they're the same fees that any student would get. And if the GI Bill is paying for those that tuition and those fees, then those are covered, you know, by the GI Bill, as long as they're specifically part of that curriculum. And registration fees are authorized. At Eastern, they're non-refundable. So if a student drops all their classes, they still got to have the $50 is going to remain on their account, but that's apples and oranges. But, so the gym, that's covered. We cover it, just because it's part of their, you know, their college experience. And we want our veterans to have the opportunity to use the gym and stay in shape as a part of their curriculum and part of their journey through college. So we do cover that fee.
Okay. You might not know the answer to this one too, but I know some universities, like Michigan, for instance, some students pay for a parking pass. If they're commuters and they don't live on campus, is there any chance of having something like a parking pass covered as well?
VR&E, Veterans Readiness and Employment, those students at Eastern, for example, have to pay for their own parking. Eastern Michigan's parking is privatized, which I think a lot of universities are now, and they don't participate in the VA's invoicing process. So the student has to pay for that benefit out of pocket and then request reimbursement from their social worker or their VR&E counselor. Now, post 9/11 students, they're not authorized parking, and they have to purchase their parking pass with their book stipend or whatever, you know, maybe some of their housing allowance. But it is kind of a, you know, it's kind of a crappy deal. You know, parking's always at a premium on probably every university. You know, parking is the one thing that keeps everybody arguing. But, it is kind of a challenge sometimes, but it's not covered. And I should just say it's not covered at Eastern Michigan.
Okay. Dale?
No, I was just thinking, you mentioned that they wouldn't pay it directly, but they might get reimbursed
Only VR&E. Only Veterans Readiness and Employment has that ability. The post 9/11 students have to purchase out of their, have to use their stipends to purchase their own parking pass.
Okay.
And that's it. And like I said, Dale, that's kind of unique to Eastern.
Right. Is the, so the VR&E, that is, has replaced the post 9/11 GI Bill. Is that correct?
No.
They're separate?
Yeah. VR&E is a completely separate program.
Okay.
It is handled like the GI Bill in terms of the way it's certified, but the pot of money that the tuition and fees comes out of, the housing allowance that comes out of it, those are all a different pot of money than the post 9/11.
Okay.
Yeah. So like I said, VR&E is an employment program to find a veteran suitable employment following service, whereas the post 9/11 GI Bill is an education benefit that can be transferred to a dependent. And it's mainly used for higher education at a four-year university. Not always, but so sometimes, you can use
My question is this. So the veteran that's getting out of service and wants to go to motorcycle repair school, do they get the same type of benefits? Do they get housing and everything else?
Yep, they do. The difference between some of those trades and a four-year university or a community college, the difference is that they go by clock hours. And so they're not measured in credit hours like a university, but they're measured in clock hours. And so there's a different calculus for someone using a VR&E or even the post 9/11 at a trade school.
Okay.
All right. So Mike, you've mentioned a couple times this process of certifying and your position at Eastern Michigan University. For students that are joining a university's program, they're going to hear this title, certifying official, quite a lot. Can you explain what that entails and what that person is able to do and who that person serves as for the students?
Okay. Yep. Sure. First off, I'd like to say the school certifying official, I've been a school certifying official now for 11 years. That's my primary function as the director of military and veteran services. It's school certifying official. There's only, at a university, the school certifying official is an additional duty in some places. Like I know at U of M, the school certifying official is in either the financial aid office or the registrar's office. And it's like an additional duty. Whereas at Eastern, it's my primary duty. And I'm the one who's hired to do that. Plus all the other stuff that goes on in a veteran center. The school certifying official is the person who sends your tuition and fees or your numbers of credit hours or your clock hours to the VA. You're the person on the ground in the trench who reports to the VA. You're a trusted agent that you're going to report your students' credit hours, tuition and fees accurately and precisely to the VA. And that's what we do on the ground. From post 9/11 to VR&E to all the other GI Bill benefits that are out there.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. We had one kind of specific question that was submitted through our social media channels through Instagram. This question is about an email that some students received a few months ago. I think it was a few months ago now. A communication from the VA saying that they would receive an additional 12 months of benefits if they had paid into the Montgomery GI Bill, I believe was the phrasing. Are you aware of an email to that effect of an additional 12 months? So going from 36 months to 48 months, and how would students know?
Yes,
if that was something pertaining to them.
I saw that message, Lydia, and got a few questions about it. I have questions about it myself. Because the message is not really clear. It does say that, you know, like if you have two different times of service that you can still have these two different GI bills. The one, what we're talking about is the one Dale used. Okay. It was called the Montgomery GI Bill Chapter 30. You paid into it while you were serving and then you used it to go to school once you left the service, or you could use it while you were in the service too. That's why it was called the active duty bill. The issue is that it's a little bit vague. So the answer that I always give the student is call the VA. The reason I say that is because I don't want to give you bad information about what benefits you have and don't have. That determination is done by the VA. And so if a student has questions about this particular message or this new rule, I tell them to call the VA, the GI Bill hotline, and talk to an agent, because they're going to be able to see all of their benefits clearly and easily. I don't have visibility of what GI Bill benefits students have, other than a date and it's like a month and a day thing, which isn't always accurate. How many, okay. in the certifying system that I use, it'll give me a little indication how many benefits are remaining for this particular student. However, it's limited. I can't see everything. And so that's why I turn them around to the GI Bill hotline, although I hate to do it. I like to be able to answer questions on the ground here, but there's just some information that just the student's just going to have to contact the VA. They can do it also through an online chat portal called askva.gov. But then most of the time I just tell them to call and talk to an agent, a live agent.
Okay.
That helps.
It's a good place to start. Yeah, it's a good place to start. And I think that's a recurring theme here, is that a lot of times the VA, because they can see all the benefits that a particular person has, is the best first stop. Checking with the portal online or talking to a live agent is the good first step for someone to take. So
exactly. And then they know they're talking to the VA and not some lowly certifying school official that's hanging out at a university who doesn't, who's trying to help. But I'm not from the government anymore.
Not anymore. So. Okay. One other question that we had received was asking about how final semesters work. So I know we talked a lot about the beginning, how students get started. A lot of students feel like they're kind of in a cruising zone for the couple years that they're using. They get into the routine of submitting the same forms at the beginning of each semester. But then they start getting closer to graduation. And I know a lot of students have questions about how the last semester can work. So for example, if a student only has 1 or 2 months of their benefits remaining, but the semester is 4 months long and it's their final semester, so they're enrolled in at least one class that they need to graduate, how does that final semester work for a student when they don't have enough to make it through the whole semester?
That's a great question. It happens a lot. I have kind of a vague answer, and I hate to say vague. However, there have been times when a student runs out of benefits, primarily with students like the dependents who got transferred entitlement from a veteran. They'll run out of benefits in the middle of the semester, and the VA will not send all of the tuition and fee money. They'll prorate it. In some other cases, I've had where I advise the student to contact the VA prior to that semester starting to ask that very same question that you asked. And many times, and I'm not saying that this is the way it always is, this is the way it's been sometimes, is that the education department will extend those benefits for an entire semester to the end of the semester to cover it. But the student has to call in advance and talk about that process and ask for that extension. I've heard that happen before. And then in other cases, they won't send it. They'll just cut it off and prorate it for a particular time of the, however, whatever their benefit runs out during that semester. So like I said, it's kind of a vague gray area.
Okay.
Round out. Now there's another thing called round out. And that's where, let's say, for example, you're taking, you've taken all your program requirements, and in the last semester of your school, right before you graduate, you only need two classes to graduate. But oh, by the way, you want that housing allowance. And you have to be full-time to get that housing allowance, which is, you know, in Ann Arbor and in Ypsilanti, it's $2,200 or $2,300 roughly. And so if you're not full-time, you don't get that whole housing allowance. It gets prorated. So the round-out rule is if you're in your last semester of your program, you can take classes that are aligned with your major that bring you to full-time. So that you can still have that full housing allowance while you're going to school your last semester.
Okay.
And that's called the round out.
I think the round out is the verbiage I've heard multiple times from students. So I'm glad you brought that term up.
Sounds like you take a lot of electives that last semester.
Oh yeah. Underwater basket weaving and
archery.
My last semester at U of M, I took a class called Woody Plants, where we went on hikes and we memorized identifying characteristics of trees, and it was amazing. That's what you do.
A broadening experience.
Yep. All right. Awesome. So I think that was a really good answer for some of our submitted questions that we received online through social media, which anyone who's listening, when we have these programs in the future, submitting questions either through our Instagram or Facebook messages is a great way. If you don't want to call into the show, I can make sure that some of those questions get on air. So that's something that we'll try to keep doing in the future. I have one more question, and this isn't about the end of school, but sometimes this happens for students while they're in between fall and spring semesters. But over the summer term, a lot of universities, instead of full-time being defined as 12 credits, they define full-time as 6 credits. Or, you know, a student is only taking one class over the summer, so they're only going to be at 3 credits. Can you talk just a little bit of general information about how benefits might be used over the summer and if it's worth it, I guess, is the question students have sometimes, if it's worth it to tap into their GI Bill over the summer just for one class?
Yeah, we have it every year. We have several of our students take summer classes. And the way I describe it to them is, at Eastern, for example, we have two main summer term parts, call them term parts. The entire summer semester is just like a fall and winter semester. However, the fall and winter aren't broken up into term parts. And so, I look at the first half of summer and I look at it like the second half of summer, and we try to get students to take undergraduate students to get to the full 12 hours. They have to take 6 in the first half of summer and 6 in the second half of summer. Grad students, their full time is 8. So they have to take essentially 2 classes in the first part of summer and 2 in the second half. So I usually try to draw a bar graph to show students visually how those two semesters collide and how they keep them getting that full-time housing allowance. And we help students pick those classes a lot. My friend and colleague at the university, we sit down with those students and really make sure that they get that full-time stipend and that they navigate between online and resident classes, because there is a difference between the amount of housing allowance if you're all online versus resident. There's a difference. And so we try to make sure that they take those summer classes. We try to get them at least one online or one resident each term part. But to answer your question, it's absolutely awesome to use your benefits over the summer. And it keeps that housing allowance going, and it keeps you're on track to graduate a little bit earlier. one of my colleague always tries to get the students to save their electives until summer, because a lot of their major classes aren't offered in the summer. So they want to try to, let's save those gen eds like English one, you know, English 100 or writing 102 or 201, save those for the summer. Because that's, those are more widely offered.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Summer was a tough question for me to figure out when I was at University of Michigan. So I think again, with the recurring themes that we have going during this hour is talk to your advisor and your certifying official at the school. Make sure that you're adhering to the university standards for what's considered full-time or what you're supposed to be taking, and see how that can be used in tandem with your benefits to get you the best possible return. That's what it sounds like.
And summer summer is the absolute worst semester to certify as a school certifying official. There's so many changes and drop dates, and I mean, it just makes it very challenging, because you have to pay really close attention in the summer.
Okay, that's good to know too. All right. Well, we had one last question that was submitted that I think Mike and I can both try to answer this one with a short tip. But the question was about transitioning from the military life to the student life and what resources students have to help them with that transition. So specifically thinking, you know, a lot of members in the military go from having a really exciting job or doing something every day that they feel like they're giving back to the community, they're serving a purpose. And then all of a sudden you're sitting in a lecture call with 200 other students learning about biology 101. And for a lot of military members, that transition to student life is really tough. And another part of that is being an older student on campus. And a lot of us that leave the military and go back to school, we're in our mid to late 20s, surrounded by students who are much younger. And it's a totally different environment. And the question was about resources on campus that students have, that veteran students have, to help them with this transition to student life. So I'll give my 30-second answer, and then Mike can give his 30-second answer. Mine is to know about your student groups and resources. Personally, the Student Veteran Organization and the Peer Advising for Veterans and Education Offices, those two places for me are what changed my experience at University of Michigan. But most schools that have a decent-sized veteran population have a student group of some sort that is for veteran students. And those guys, for example, helped me pass calculus, and it was life-changing. But having a community of people and reaching out and knowing what your resources were was really important for me. Mike, do you have any alibis to that for a last word?
Yeah, well, Eastern Michigan put all their money where their mouth is, and they opened up a veteran center where veterans can come and hang out in our lounge. They get a computer lab. We got snacks and things like that. I find that having that welcome USO flavor environment, new veterans come in, we sit down and talk. We don't even talk about school sometimes. We just talk about where you're from, you know, what'd you do, why are you here, break the ice, and then start talking business. Start getting into the checklist. Did you do this? Did you do that? Have you registered for classes? Do you need help finding your classrooms? Do you know where? And so we help them do those initial walk around campus things, because it just makes them feel comfortable, and it makes them feel safe, and they, you know, they feel like they're welcome. You know, a lot of times I think if they were to go to a big campus and there's no lounge, or there's no liaison, you know, who's military, has a military mindset, then they kind of get lost and maybe frustrated. We try to eliminate that whole thing. It's not about a party. It's about sitting down, caring about people, and showing them how to get there, you know, showing them how to get through school, helping them register for classes, making sure, you know, we send out targeted emails with regard to those important things that are coming out of the registrar's office that they're not going to totally understand. We put it in military language so they can understand it, and we put a precedence on it so they understand. You know how when you're at training and they stomp their foot three times? You know, remember that point when they stomp their foot.
I got to jump in here, Mike.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Thank you.
We're coming up to the end of our program today. Lydia, thank you very much for putting this educational program together. Mike Weiss from Eastern Michigan University. If you have any questions, I'm sure that, you know, if you want to contact us, we'll point you in the right direction here on Veterans Radio. So I appreciate both of you and the effort that you put into this. Again, I want to remind people to donate blood. You know, go over there and mention Joe Melcher's name wherever you are, Air Force veteran. Go to redcross.org and schedule an appointment to help him out. We're going out on God Bless America again, our favorite tune, of course. And I want to thank everybody for listening today. And I'm getting ready for my 10-second countdown. I can see he's getting all fired up here. So thank you very much for listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be back again next week. Until then, you are dismissed.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountains to the prairies, to the oceans, white with foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home.